Thank you for joining us. I'm Bill Gibson, the author of this program. I'm also the chairperson of Knowledge Brokers International, the developers, the producers, and publishers of the program. This program was initially done in conjunction with Inseka Enterprise Promotion Agency, which is part of the Department of Trade and Industry in South Africa. Also, Inseka was financially supported for this project by the European Union. We'd like to say thank you to these three organizations for their initial support. I'm a Canadian that's been here in South Africa a large percentage of my time for the past 10 years assisting South African businesses with marketing, selling, leadership development, and entrepreneurial programs, systems, and consulting services. The program will start with the qualities and characteristics of successful entrepreneurs and then move to looking at the 51 successful ways you can find and recognize business opportunities. From there, you'll find out how to evaluate and test your ideas and narrow them down until you have an opportunity, not just an idea. We'll then experience the 9 stages of business growth and decline and how to pinpoint and capitalize on where you're at with those stages. We'll finish with how you and your team can stay forever entrepreneurial by putting an entrepreneurial culture into your business. The audio cassettes and audio CDs are identical in content. We've done this so if you only have an audio cassette player or only an audio CD player, you are still looked after. The audio portion of this program was recorded by me in front of a live audience in Port Elizabeth, South Africa, with comments from Marius Liebenberg, my South African partner. The live audio portion is also interspersed with comments from me in the recording studio. The live audio portion is more spontaneous and will give you the feeling you are part of the audience. You'll even hear the water glasses clinking now and again, and hear the sounds of the cellophane wrapping paper coming off the candy as our guests help themselves to the candy on the table in front of them. The sound of the chimes will indicate we are either switching to the studio or switching back to you live at the venue. The learning and implementation manual is more detailed than the audio portion. It has assessment tools, charts, and exercises that can help you really get to understand and put the content to work. We will start with Module 1, Assessing Your Entrepreneurial Qualities.
I just want to start out with a little skit here, and I'm a consultant, and I'm here to consult Marius on his business here in Port Elizabeth. Marius, Bill Gibson.
Morning, Bill. Welcome. I'm really looking forward to having you here.
Good to see you. Good to see you.
Yes, nice having you, and I'm glad you could have come.
And I understand you had a few problems with your business.
I have a bit of a concern on my cash flow is not there. I'm having problems meeting payroll. My sales are a bit down. I'm actually losing clients, and it's a big concern to me.
One of the thoughts for you might help you a bit is that, you know, our meeting was set for 8 a.m. and it's 8:45, and I know you're a little late, but I had an opportunity to look around your business and sit in the front lobby. And I listened to that lady that you have on the front and the way she handles customers. And I am really surprised you have any customers. Because she's rude, she's short with people, she drops the phone down, yells for people. And that kind of stuff loses business. And maybe to start with, you should look at replacing her.
Yeah, but Bill, you do not know that, but that's my brother's wife that I've appointed in the business.
Oh, okay. So you can't do it because it's an in-law.
I cannot do that.
Okay. And you're telling me cash flow is really tight.
Yes.
Okay,
definitely.
That 5 Series BMW out there, who owns it?
Oh, that's mine.
That's yours.
Nice, eh?
Okay, and you don't have any cash.
Yeah, but Bill,
in just a minute now, and that Merc that just drove away, that lady in the Merc, was that your wife?
Yes,
it was. It's a new Merc.
But Bill, you know.
Why don't you sell it?
In the community that I live in, I have to adhere to certain standards, and there's an image that I need to uphold of my business, that it's a successful business, and people buy from successful businesses, and...
So well, you
what
think,
are my kids going to look at school like?
If you deliver them off in a Toyota
exactly.
or something, okay, or a used car, okay, maybe we can get you a good used car. Anybody here sell used cars? That's right. I think we could probably get you a good used car and get rid of that and take and use the cash.
Yeah, right? But Bill, my social status is important.
It
it's
is.
Important for our business as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, how many clubs do you belong to and associations, and how many little groups do you and meetings do you go to on a weekly basis?
Quite a lot, because I need to be part of the community to be seen as somebody that's responsible, and I need to associate with my business partners.
Yeah, well, one of the things, though, Mario, is when you first start a business, is that the key is to focus on your business and put the time into the business. And definitely you've got your social circles and everything, but your lifestyle changes. And now, and by the way, you know, 8:30, 8:45, you show up, and I've got a meeting with you at 8 o'clock, and you're paying me for this time. I start at the clock at 8 a.m., right? I mean, what are your hours? What are you doing showing up at 8:45?
Well, you must know that I had a bit of a social event last night and quite a bit late.
A little bubble up. Okay.
Yes, and I need to do these things because I need to be seen in the community. It's important.
What kind of hours do you work? Come on now. You know, what time do you normally start and normally finish in the run of a day in this business?
Well,
I know you're on your own business. You're your own boss, which is really nice.
Yeah. I used to be in banking.
You were a banker?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, banking hours. Okay.
And I made a promise to myself that when I'm going to have my own business, I'm not going to work on weekends. And I think it's important to make sure that you adhere to your family needs and your social needs and your business needs, and you have to have a balanced lifestyle.
Yes, definitely a balanced lifestyle. Well, if you continue with the balanced lifestyle that you've got, you probably won't have a lifestyle. Because let me say this, that if your sales are down and business isn't there, figure it out. You're working about 40 hours a week if we're lucky. 40 real hours. 40 hours a week. Now you're out there selling. What if you worked 80 hours a week for the next 4 weeks? Then you've got 8 weeks of work in. And you actually probably can sell twice as well as the people you got working for you. And so really, you've got 16 weeks of somebody else's time. So in 4 weeks, you decided, you put your mind to it, and you know, I'm going 80 hours a week for 4 weeks. You don't have to do it for the rest of your life. You'd have this business up and you'd have it moving. Because at the end of that, the business will come in. Because what you sow, you reap in business. And if you do not put the effort in, and especially getting your business off the ground, you have to forget about your lifestyle when you get the business off the ground. And I know you want your image to be up there and you want to drive the same BMWs and the Mercs that everybody else is driving, but go and ask those people what they drove when they started their business and what they were like. Then you're going to see what's happening. Folks, that's called the Yeah But game. Thank you, Marius. Who would agree that there are a lot of things that we need to do with our business sometimes, but we have these little yeah buts in our heads to stop us? Really, the key in business, in my opinion, is that sometimes we have to look at the realities, we make certain decisions, and the key is moving to action. It's not yeah button. Years ago, I did this, we used to do seminars around Canada for small business, a guy named Neil Godden and I, and we used to do this yeah but game. And we used to call it the yeah but game, and our big thing was don't yeah but, become a do it, move to action. We've provided you lots of notes and things that you can take and work on afterwards, but the key to it will be what we take back and what we take and put into action. In reference to business ownership and going into business, there's basically three types of businesses that you go into. One of them is a lifestyle business. A consultant that is on his own, or a lady that's on her own working out of her own house, is probably a lifestyle business. They're self-employed, but most of it is based around lifestyle, because if they decided to stop that business, doing that business, the business would stop. A carpenter that has a little carpenter business, a plumber that's pretty well on his own, would have a lifestyle business. And then you got a second group called the community or generic business, and a number of you in here would be part of a generic business. And that is if you have a business that probably just caters to that community. You have a retail store that caters to this community, then it's probably what you call a community or a generic business. And then you have what you call high growth businesses. And a high growth business is somebody that's expanding. And I see we have some people that are here, guests of Steers. Well, Steers would be a high growth business across the country. Because it's part of a franchise, part of an organization. Somebody that goes international, you got a lot of people here in Port Elizabeth, in this area, that are into the exporting business. In actuality, they're into more of a high growth business where they're expanding off into other markets. So you basically got three types of businesses. It's only a small portion of SMEs, small to medium businesses, that are responsible for creating the majority of the jobs. A lot of the small businesses create the job because the owner has now taken and created a job for themselves. And then you have those that are really aggressive entrepreneurial business that create the majority. The dynamic companies and entrepreneurs are the highest growers of job generators in any given country. When you look at how incomes are generated, now I took this out of Kiyosaki's book, and he wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and this is sort of Rich Dad's Guide to Financial Freedom, and he says there's basically four ways that you get income. And one is you can get income from being an employee. And so as an employee, you get paid. Then you have the other one is where you get income where you're self-employed. And then you got the other side, you got business in the top right-hand corner, you can be a business owner. And that's a little different than self-employed. The self-employed is more like the lifestyle business. The business owner is where if you go on vacation, you're still making money. Somebody else is running the business. So you got people bringing money in for you. And then down at the bottom right-hand corner, you can be an investor. And that is you take your money and you've got your money working for you. So the objective really and goal is, as any operator, if you want to create riches and wealth in your life, is to eventually get the majority of your income coming from that right-hand side versus the left-hand side. Otherwise, we're always having to run and generate every penny that we have. So you want people working for you, or you want to get out there and take that money as you make that money from the business you have and get that working for you.
To help you decide which of the three business categories is best suited for you, there are three charts in Module 1 that clearly outlines the advantages and disadvantages of each one of these categories. You may want to take a look at that.
In reference to entrepreneurs, one of the biggest things I think with successful entrepreneurs is they embrace change. As I'm going through this, take a look at these, and you've got this in a little handout. The one that I'm going through right now is this one here. Maybe just take it, and if we say embraces change, give yourself a rating. Take a pen and give yourself a rating and a scale from 0 to 10 just as we walk through it. And just see how you see yourself against these qualities. And none of us are going to hit 100% on them because that's impossible. So as an entrepreneur, we embrace change. They're flexible, they're open to new ideas, and they expect constant change. We don't sit there and get upset every time something changes because we know that's the most constant thing along with income tax is change. The graveyard of business is literally littered with companies that fail to recognize the need to change and look for new opportunities and new ways to do things. The persons who propose change in any given situation is going to probably have the most energy, ideas, and best appreciation of what is needed to carry out the project. And we're often opposed to even people that work with us or groups of people that we're together with, and you got somebody in there that's proposing change. And for most of us, we go on the defense in reference to change. And the problems of the times, in essence, are the opportunities of the future. Who would agree with that? The problems of the times are the opportunities of the future. While everybody else is complaining about the problems, the entrepreneurs say, how do I do something with this? And they take and they turn it into opportunities.
Agility is an organization's ability to anticipate changing market dynamics and adapt to them faster than the rate of change in the market in order to create economic value. That's Michael Manasian's quote, Regional President, Middle East and Africa, at EDS.
Who would agree that good entrepreneurs are not big risk takers? They're really risk assessors. They've developed the skills to take and look at something and assess the risk. So they're more risk assessors, not risk takers. They are more investors rather than gamblers. They're calculated risk takers. And they always consider the one thing going in on most deals, you'll find that they'll always consider the worst scenario. And if you can't live with that, you don't do it.
The high-performance African business will require bold, but not reckless, vision. A quote from Wayne Furphy, Country Managing Director, Accenture, South Africa.
Mediocrity is unacceptable with top-producing people. Those who are hired or dismissed and why and even when and how goes to the very heart of the character of a company, its management, and its leadership. And that's where that little skit with Marius, where I said, you've got that lady on the front that's very rude to people, not doing a very good job, and he says, yeah, but she's married to my brother. Well, that's very unfortunate, but you can't keep that lady on the front because your business is going to take a beating for it. So you got to figure out some other solution. It's a reality. Mediocrity is self-inflicted. Genius is self-bestowed. There was a guy get up one morning and he was heading out to the golf course. His wife said, where are you going? It was a Saturday morning. He said, no, I'm going to go play golf with Harry. She said, what time are you going to be home? He said, I'll be home about noon. And she said, but you've said that before and I want to go shopping and you didn't arrive home at noon. And he said, no, sweetheart, I promise you. Anybody ever done that? Made a promise after golf that you'd be sort of right home and you didn't arrive? You actually look guilty. Okay, and so he made this promise, definitely I'll be home. So she said, okay, and off he went. At about 12:30, 1 o'clock, he's not home. Matter of fact, at 4:30, 5 o'clock, he's still not home. And about 9 p.m., he comes rolling up to the house. Now, normally, at about 9 p.m., when he would roll up to the house, he'd be in pretty tough shape. Well, this day, he rolls up to the house on a Saturday afternoon at 9 o'clock or late Saturday afternoon, and he still looked pretty sharp. walked up to the door, and as he went through the door, she went for him. And man, was she upset. And he said, "Sweetheart, slow down. Let me explain. And she thought, well, there's something a little different here because there's no alcohol in this man's breath. Okay? And he said, "I have to explain." And she said, "Okay, I'll give you a chance. What happened?" He said, "Well, I went down, picked up Harry, and we went to the golf course. And I teed off, and it was the best drive of my life. Straight down the center of the fairway. And Harry, I could see him getting up tight, and he got up there, and he teed off, and he sliced the ball to the right. It hit a tree, bounced over into the bush. He said, into the bush went Harry to try and find it, and he's cursing and swearing, and he's upset. And I hollered, "Harry, you're on the golf course. This language is not permitted here. You can't speak this way." And so I finally got him quieted down. He went in there, and I could see his head, and he wound up, and he hit that golf ball, and it hit another tree, and it went further into the bush. Then I hear him swear, and I said, "Harry, don't talk that way on the golf course." He get in there, and he was obviously in the rocks, and I heard him whack that thing, and he didn't hit the golf ball. He obviously hit the rocks, and he bent or broke his golf club, and I heard him scream, and then the next thing, there's silence, nothing. And I hollered, "Harry," no answer. He said, and I walked over into the bush, and there was Harry laying there, and he had died of a heart attack because he got himself so upset. She said, "That's horrible." And she said, "Well, but what time did that happen?" He said, "About 7:15 in the morning." And she said, "But this is 9 p.m. How come it's taking you so long to get home?" He said, "Sweetheart, it takes a long time to do 18 holes of golf while you're dragging Harry." The thing is that who would agree that it's tough to succeed in your business when you're dragging Harry? When you got people working for you, that there's a lot of mediocrity around. When they're not efficient, they're not doing the job, and you're trying to compete with the competition while you're dragging Harry. And so mediocrity doesn't count.
According to Robin Sharma, author, Leadership Wisdom from the Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, remember that when you settle for mediocrity in the small things, you will also begin to settle for mediocrity in the big things. And anything less than a conscious commitment to peak personal performance is an unconscious commitment to weak personal performance.
Successful entrepreneurs, they're ingenious. By the way, on that mediocrity one, and accepting mediocrity, how many people here gave yourself a 10 that you just don't accept it? I wish I could, but I haven't either in reference to that. Ingenious. Every successful person or genius produces vast amounts of work they have the capacity. If we don't have capacity for working, it's going to be tough to succeed in your own business. Who would agree? But you've got to take and put in the hours. I had a guy ask me one time at a session, he said, "Bill, what's it take to succeed in a business when you first get started?" I said, "It's very simple. Get yourself a great, huge desk in your business, a big one, and under it have a little bed built so you can pull that out in case you have to sleep. And on the side, you put a hot plate so you can cook your meals. And over here, you have a little fridge, and you can have the odd beer. Put a little shower just over in the corner." And I said, and that's the reality when you're starting a business. Who would agree with me? That is the reality. And a lot of guys, and what happens is they come out of a large corporation, or they get their pension fund, or whatever it may be, and they decide, "I'm going into business," and they've come out of the corporate world. And what do they first usually do? Set up a board of directors, 3 or 4 people for their one-person business. And then they put a strategic plan together. They do a lot of planning instead of selling. And there's a whole lot of things that begin to happen, and then they wonder why the business is not working. The key, when you first start a business, get out there and make it happen. So they produce vast amounts of work. Their capacity is really high. They literally never know fatigue. Sure, they get tired, and they fall over. But they get back in there, and they hit it. And their minds, amazingly enough, as they get older, grows more brilliant as they grow older, not less brilliant, because they become sharper. They can sense, they can see things. They know when that's walking down a blind alley. And their minds are actually sharper versus getting dimmer.
Here's somebody that has a huge capacity for output, never seems to know fatigue, and his mind grows more brilliant as he grows older. Alan Amber, the chairman of Spur in South Africa, says in the first 10 years of Spur's 36-year existence, he worked 20 hours a day. And still, after 36 years of owning the business, when it is necessary, he still works an 18-hour day until the urgency is over. He is well on in his years, and he still does it.
Timing is the big thing. There's 4 keys a friend of mine told me once, and His name was Peter Thomas. And he said, look, Bill, it's the right people, it's communication, it's financing, and it's timing. He said, but the key in the start of a project or a launch of a venture, the most important is addressing the timing. Because you can have a really good idea, but if you launch that thing in the wrong timing, you're in trouble. And he said, it's sharp, sharp people pick up on the right timing. They step in at the right time on something. They're successful venture specialists. They immerse themselves in new ventures and learns the ins and outs of the business, hands over to a good MD or financial director who are given a stake to make it happen. And then they're expected to make it take off. That's how Richard Branson works. So he's really good at finding the opportunities, good in there getting it started up, and then he really brings in the guys behind him to make it happen. Peter Thomas is a friend of mine out of Canada. Peter used to own Century 21 Real Estate, a bunch of travel agencies, and he's a venture capitalist. And he said the main job as an entrepreneur he sees is evaluating opportunities. So look at the opportunities, evaluate them, he said, then choose the type of business to be in and set up the goals and objectives with the team, he said, and then find the right persons to take and manage the business. And often, the entrepreneurial ability, the skills to capitalize on new opportunities are not the same ones as running the day-to-day operations. And that's why we need good managers and people that can go in there and handle things for us. Who's ever heard somebody say something like this? Look, I just can't believe it. I mean, I've told that guy once, twice, three, four, five, six times how to do that, and he screwed up again. I just can't believe it. Anybody ever done that? Yeah, I just can't believe it. You know what I say? Believe it. If a guy screws up six times, why are we saying, I don't believe it? If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it is not an eagle. It's a duck. I had 40 offices across Canada one time doing business owner development programs. And we'd take business owners and put them in a program for 10 months. And we had a business advisor go into their business every month for 4 hours. And we'd run 12, 15 seminars on aspects of running businesses. And the one thing I used to say to the guys at the start of the session, all the business owners, if I did the kickoff night, I said, please do me a favor. If you've got a business advisor coming to your business, tell them the truth. If your sales are down, you know what I say? Believe it. Because while you're saying, I don't believe it, you don't do anything about it. I can't believe what this guy just did. Believe it. Looking at reality is the key, because once I see it for what it is, then I can move to action, can I? And say that's the reality and it's not negative. Really successful entrepreneurs, they recognize the fact, okay, when they're in trouble. We brave, we talk to friends and peers, they don't have a problem, they have a couple of key people. Usually top business people have a few key people that they go and they can talk to. And they're willing to cut their losses. Protect the downside, always be ready to take them walk away. They have a good support team. This is what Peter Thomas said to me. He said, Bill, here's how I operate. He said, I have a trusted number two. Marius is my trusted number two in the business. So he says, I have a trusted number two. He says, I have a credible board of directors. One person that does a lot of these. Okay. He says, I have a dynamic sales team. Marius is my dynamic sales team. He says, and I have a good marketing man. Okay, either if it depends on the business, should I have somebody from the outside that really understands marketing, or I have one on the inside to make these ventures roll. He said, I've got enthusiastic, efficient office staff. And he said, and I've got a good, strong chief financial advisor. And Marius is my chief financial advisor as well. You need a good legal advisor. He says, it's tough to do business. You don't have a really good legal advisor you can trust. And a good banker. This is an interesting one. How many people here are satisfied with the banker you got? One, two, three. You could sell that guy's name, eh? This good banker that you got. Now, it's interesting because often I'll talk to business people and they'll say things like this. And we've just gone through it with our bank. We're unhappy about some stuff. And it's so easy to say, you know, those bloody bankers, they don't give a damn about your business. They don't really take the time to find out what your business is about. Okay? And then they make decisions that can affect, be negative to your business. And they really don't know how to look after customers. Ever heard that before about bankers? And my question is around believe it. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's not an eagle. If it walks like a banker, talks like a banker, it's not a promotions person. It's a banker. I always like to ask the question, do you need your bank more than they need you, or do they need you more than you need them? 50-50, And I would say in most cases, especially when we first get going in a business, we need the bank more than they need us. Absa will get along fine without me. In a pinch, I might not get along fine without them. And so one of the big things around the banker that I think is important is that we take them, we look at a banker just like we would clients and figure out how we're going to market to them, how we're going to build relationships, how we're going to build relationships with the people above them as well, and make sure they really know what's going on so that the day I do really need them, that I'm ready to take and make it happen. And it's hard to do that when you feel like on one side I'm the customer and I shouldn't have to do that. But I believe it's a reality when we're running our own business. A good R&D department, research and development department, or R&D person is important, and personal support system on a personal level. Because oftentimes from a business point of view, you want to get out of it and you need somebody on a personal level to give you good support. And often that support, who would agree, comes from your family. One of the first things before somebody goes into a new venture is to really try and make sure that the people you live with, the person you're married to or have that significant relationship with, that they are on side, because it does require changing of lifestyle. They have a good resourceful network. This is some good advice. We have an accountant in here, I know, and I don't know if we have an attorney here, but here's one of the keys. Don't go to an accountant or an attorney for business advice. Go to an accountant for accounting advice. Go to a tax expert for tax advice. Go to a banker for good banking advice. Go to an attorney for good legal advice. But if you want really good business advice about your business, go to another successful business person. Who would agree? And that's all we're saying. Where a lot of people make mistakes, it's because somebody has the qualifications or the expertise in a certain area, and they admire the fact that that person has that expertise, they go to them for advice on almost everything. And so we say go to a good successful business person if you want straight business advice. The power of a good network, what it does for a good entrepreneur is it enlarges their span, their sphere of action. It allows them to gain access to resources and opportunities that are usually unavailable, and it helps them avoid obstacles. Because if you have a good network of people, what happens is that they'll tell you about obstacles and things. You gain new clients. Okay? So the power of a good resourceful network is important. Entrepreneurs, they get back in the saddle quickly. Failure is part of success. Failure is not the opposite to success. It's part of success if we can take and learn the lessons from it and move forward. And they do not give up easily. Walt Disney, he was under 5 times. He went bankrupt 5 times before he succeeded with Disneyland. And you'll find that those that have gone in, I see Donald Trump's got a new book out. And it's all about how he's come back and he's worth so many billions of dollars. And then he was down and out a few years ago. And part of it is, I think, that the entrepreneur knows the processes that he used before and how it worked. And all of a sudden, he's down and out. It's a matter of taking a little rest, getting the energy back in there, and they step back in. And so they work. They've got the persistence.
Herman Meshaba is the owner and founder of Black Like Me. And what he said is it wasn't always easy for him. See, a lot of people don't know it, but along the way, Meshaba and Black Like Me took a few knocks and had to deal with a buyout from Colgate-Palmolive that went sour, and he ended up buying the company back. And he also was literally almost destroyed through a devastating fire. But Herman Meshaba's rebound value is remarkable, and Black Like Me rose to new heights from 1994 onwards. Nowadays, the company does an annual turnover of around 80 million rand per year, and has successfully launched in Europe. Herman is a typical successful entrepreneur. He's got right back in the saddle, like successful entrepreneurs do.
Their work ethic, they're never a 9-to-5 person. That little scenario that Marius and I did. And there are lots of people that will want to go into the business and immediately have a 9-to-5 type job. I've never seen it work. A good successful business doesn't happen in 9-to-5, not in the beginning. The working day is never long enough, and they like others to work as hard in the same hours as they do, which is tough because we got to be aware that our staff may not look at the business the same way that we do, or they eventually don't get the same rewards either. Right now, I'm putting several projects out, and I'm flying people up from Cape Town just to support people on Sunday and Monday to work with me because the people that are working with me in Joburg are worn out. And if I expected them to try and go for another weekend with me, they're going to leave me. And we do. There is a tendency to expect them to do it just because we do it, but it's usually not possible. And as you know, we work odd hours. We're comfortable with uncertainty. Okay, they can make decisions when the best options aren't clear. We live in the world of uncertainty. And by the way, the key in the world of uncertainty is to continually walk in the world of into the world of uncertainty, certain of your success, because you're practicing winning habits and principles on a daily basis. The only guarantee any of us have is the principles of success, whatever it is we're practicing in our business. If we continue with that, that uncertainty clears up each month as we take and we move through it. Solution-oriented, they're not usually looking for problems or complaining. They're looking for solutions. They are very achieve-oriented and goal-oriented. They like to be the lead dog. And being the lead dog, as you know, your view always changes. If you're not the lead dog, you usually got the same view.
Achievement and goal-oriented. Alan Amber, founder, chairman of Spur, he says this: the core is real dedication and an unswerving sense of purpose. You have to have a goal. You cannot be all things to all people. Know where you're going and where you can take the company. Herman Meshaba says, it is not enough for an entrepreneur in our day and age to simply do good business. He must also be able to mobilize people to reach for the implementation of a common business idea, which is a goal. I believe it is the role of the entrepreneur to build the business sector and also to encourage and inculcate competitiveness in our economic practices and the environment. That's Herman Meshaba.
The commitment and perseverance, they don't give up. They focus under pressure. They don't fall apart under pressure. Put some real pressure on them, and they focus in. They're confident and self-reliant, and lines mean a lot to them. Timelines and deadlines. We don't have timelines, we don't have deadlines, it doesn't usually happen. And they usually work with mentors. There's very few people that have done well in their life that they haven't had somebody else or a few other people that they have looked at or they have learned from and continue to learn from, and they're not afraid to take and utilize mentors. And they'll utilize direct mentors or indirect mentors. And an indirect mentor is taking and studying people at the distance and reading books and things of that sort. And they're open to hear the truth about themselves. They're willing to look at themselves to take and make change. They're disciplined and determined. Total freedom requires absolute discipline. And with entrepreneurs with freedom, the ultimate goal is increased freedom. How many people here do own your own business? What's one of the biggest reasons why you do own your own business? Would it be freedom? Yeah. It's that freedom feeling. If somebody comes along or you're going to take a business partner in, before I would take a partner in, I have to look awfully close on a deal because the biggest thing I'm questioning is what's going to happen to my freedom. And it's the increasing of the freedom. It's one of the big motivators with entrepreneurs. They like to be in control. Never be enslaved by someone else's plan. Otherwise, they would go work for somebody else.
Ann Pratt, the Businesswoman's Association's Entrepreneur of the Year for 2003-2004 here in South Africa, who is owner of Ann Pratt & Associates, a South African executive search firm, she says this: entrepreneurs challenge the status quo. They don't like to follow a book of rules made by someone else. They want to be guided by the market, not by another person's rules.
And they understand that people build brands. How to maximize those people's skills while protecting all concern from their shortcomings. We've all got shortcomings, but you can have somebody working for you that's really good in one area but weak in the other, but you try not to let that flow over into the other people because it can zap the energy from the group.
Wisdom does not reside in one head. In the end, life is about people. That's a statement made by Lazarus Zim, Deputy CEO of Anglo American in South Africa. Les Wexner, founder of The Limited, named by Fortune as one of the new champs of retailing, interviewed Steven Spielberg, Jack Welch, and Wayne Calloway. And Jack Welch is GE's top man, Wayne Calloway is PepsiCo's CEO. They all said that they spent about half their time on people, recruiting new talent, picking the right people, grooming young stars, developing global managers, and dealing with underperformers and reviewing the talent pool. Yes, people build brands.
Ask questions. They're not embarrassed to ask questions. They're not embarrassed to say to somebody, look, I don't understand what you're talking about, or what does that term mean? It doesn't bother them to do it. And they're not, and they don't mind paying for it either, to take and lay out some money from a consulting point of view. They inspire people. They mentor and they're a good example to their staff and associates. They're good leaders.
Bill Pollack, founder of Drake International, says this: you cannot expect loyalty and integrity if you do not display it yourself. Iqbal Survey, owner of Sukhanjalo Investments, a black-controlled and managed holding company with investments in healthcare, fishing, information technology, property, and financial services, says this: senior management can develop a competitive strategic advantage by unlocking creativity within their staff. Real transformation is not just replacing white managerial faces with black ones, he says, but transformation through the development of our people here in South Africa.
And usually they like applause, even the quiet ones, because their applause could be the monuments they build. It could be the building they build. It could be the house they live in. It could be the car they drive. It could be the reputation they have, which is their own monuments, okay? They want to leave a legacy. They're usually very good self-promoters and self-marketers. You'll often find them with an entourage of people around them that are part of what's going on, and people like to be with them. They're really good at growing markets, which I think this is getting down into the real good business stuff. A good, sharp entrepreneur knows how to create and grow additional markets and business rather than fight for a larger share of a shrinking or profit-diminishing pie. They'll take a look at the market and figure, how do we go over here? How do we move in a different way with what we're doing? They reshape industries. They reshape their industries by redefining boundaries and gathering appropriate partners with whom they can network and align to. An example of that is in the business that we're in right now. I mean, we've just aligned ourselves with Nseka on a project to get to the SMEs in a totally different way than people in our business normally would go to the SMEs. Because you look at the traditional way, and for, as an entrepreneur, I said, I don't want to go that way. It's going to cost me too much money. There's another way to do it. So it's reshaping and rechanging. And they're very good at molding opportunities. They recognize opportunities and they mold them to fit their business in order to be able to seize and capitalize on them.
Alan Kay made this statement: the best way to predict the future is to invent it. It was on the cover of the magazine Intelligence Total Business.
They're very good at attracting money. They got an uncanny ability to persuade people to confidently invest in their projects. Say, where in the heck does that guy find his money? Yeah, he has that ability to draw money towards him. Proactive opportunity hunters. They're proactive and the uncanny ability to spot, interpret, and evaluate new market opportunities.
I like entrepreneurship, which is about seeing things that other people do not. That's David Machapalo, entrepreneur who's already a millionaire in his 40s, and he came from humble beginnings, and he has served as the Secretary General of FAPCOS.
Now, when you get the manual, which we'll give to you, is you're going to find in the manual a quite an in-depth assessment tool in reference to entrepreneurial qualities that you can go through, and then there's some work exercises that a person can take and work with it. But I want to take and review those off the top. Now, before I go any further in reference to this, I want you to just take a moment and think about the qualities we've just gone through. Which one of them in there would you say, for you sitting here this morning so far, that you picked up was probably the most valuable as a reminder? I'm just going to take a little feedback from a couple of you. What would you say that you picked up, Roland?
Freedom comes from the ultimate discipline. Total discipline gives you the freedom in the end. If you enter mastery and you master what you're doing and you continue to be disciplined, that'll give you that freedom.
And it can be anything. Like, I've seen people as financial advisors, and the one discipline they have is follow-up. And so every time they visit somebody, they send a note to say, it was a nice meeting with you. When the guy's birthday comes up, they wish him happy birthday. Okay, when the guy's children's birthday come up, or his wife's, his anniversary is coming up, the advisor's phoning him to remind him a week in advance, by the way, your anniversary is next week. But the person took and mastered follow-up, that one thing, and they're a top producer, and that's the main reason, because they took something and mastered it. So it's the discipline to take and make that happen. Anybody else got something you want to put input there?
The most important thing for me was the ability to delegate and have a good support team. Because often, even if you're not a business owner, you're responsible for certain projects on your own, and you feel that you need to control it all and keep it to yourself.